Hi, everyone, and welcome to Focus Forward, an executive function podcast where we explore the challenges and celebrate the wins you'll experience as you change your life through working on improving your executive function skills. I'm your host, Hannah Choi. If you are new to Focus Forward, you may not know that we are a production of Beyond Booksmart. Beyond Booksmart offers life-changing executive function and ADHD support to students, adults, and schools. Our one-to-one personalized executive function coaching subscription is currently being offered at a lower price. So if you're interested, check out our website, beyondbooksmart.com, to learn more. As a person with ADHD or executive function challenges, it can often feel like society, you know, people at work, in our homes, anyone we encounter during our day, expects you to think, work, and communicate the same way as everyone else. It can be exhausting and often require that you advocate for yourself and your needs more often than you would like. And the first step of that self-advocacy is figuring out exactly what it even is that you need. In this episode, I'm joined by Melissa Llewellyn-Snyder and Brianna Morton. They are both ADHD coaches and co-hosts of the Hypercast ADHD podcast. I got to sit on the other side of the mic as a guest on their podcast with my coaching client, Caroline. We talked all about finding success in college as a student with executive function challenges. You can find the link to that Hypercast episode in the show notes. It was so great. In this Focus Forward episode, we explored the power of self-acceptance because, as they say, it is truly the foundation for building strong and effective self-advocacy skills. Melissa, Brianna, and I discussed the challenges of setting boundaries, navigating dynamics at work and in our personal lives, and learning to communicate our needs without guilt or apology. We talked about the importance of having people around you who get you. And most importantly, we talked about embracing our differences rather than masking them, because as Brianna shared, you're not a weird horse, you're a perfectly normal zebra. If you're interested in learning more about self-advocacy for kids, check out my interview with Dr. Narissa Bauer in episode 39. If you've ever struggled with advocating for yourself or feeling like you don't quite fit in, this conversation is for you. Let's get on with the show.
Hi, I am Melissa Llewellyn-Snyder. I am an ADHD coach and founder of Like Mind Coaching, and I am co-host and executive producer of Hypercast, an ADHD podcast.
Yay. Well, very professional. Very well done.
Thank you. Well done.
My name is Brianna Morton. I'm also an ADHD coach. I'm a therapy intern, and I'm the founder of Understanding ADHD, and I'm a co-host on Hypercast, the ADHD podcast.
Yay.
Thank you for inviting us. We're excited to be here. When we had you on, we had so much fun. I have actually talked nonstop about how enjoyable that recording experience was. So thank you for having us. And thank you for coming on our podcast as well.
Oh, of course. Anytime. It was so fun to bring my client Caroline on. She was over the moon after that conversation too.
She is such an amazing human being. Did you know how amazing she is? You knew that before you brought her on.
Yes, that is why I chose her.
She's just like, I've never met someone with that much like pure love, just like sweetness and kindness.
Yeah. She is just a really special person. Yes. So grateful to know her. Yeah. Yep. So cool. So, you know, something what I really want to talk to you guys about today, which I'm so excited to talk about, is self-advocacy. And that's something that we talked about on the podcast before, and we did it from a kid's point of view. So like self-advocacy for kids. And so I thought, oh, how cool would it be to do self-advocacy for adults? Because we always think about kids needing to learn self-advocacy skills, but adults really do. They either need to learn them or they need to continually practice them. Mm-hmm. And setting boundaries comes up so often in all of my conversations. I'm sure it does with you too, but setting boundaries comes up in all the conversations I have with my adult clients and my college clients, but how scary it can be to set boundaries and also how freeing it can be. Mm-hmm. And so I just thought we could, you know, dig into that today.
Yeah, no, I think that's great because kids sometimes don't get the lessons that you were talking about in your last episode, and therefore they have to learn the skills in adulthood and they don't have that practice and that rote memorization of how to set boundaries and what that could possibly benefit in their lives. So
Yeah.
absolutely.
And we're coming from, but we have some generations. I feel like the current generation is, or Gen Z and the younger millennials, they talk about their feelings and they talk about boundaries. They talk about these things. But you start getting to maybe some older millennials, Gen X, and older than that. These things were taboo. We did not talk about these things.
Yes.
We had to
Yeah.
swallow our feelings and
Yes.
deal with and deal with what the world was and what was given to us, really. And so establishing those skills, establishing the ability to actually establish boundaries, that's something we have to build in adulthood. And that can actually be harder. It's like learning a language,
Yeah.
which is easier as a child, not as easy as an
Yeah,
adult.
right.
Yeah.
And not only do you have to establish boundaries, but you got to figure out what your feelings are first. Like, you
Oh,
got to even
yeah.
figure out how to name this weird feeling that you're having that is making you maybe even want to set a boundary to begin with.
Correct. Yeah.
And Brianna, you know a lot about this because isn't your thesis on something around this topic?
Which one?
Your first one, communication.
Oh, man. Yeah, sorry, I'm thesis brained right now. Yeah, absolutely. I was thinking, like, how can I talk about the different kinds of boundaries and what is a boundary and what is a like demand versus what is like manipulation? Because like boundaries and requests are different things and the way you communicate them is different. So yeah, and then I was also thinking about like the gender differences because I was thinking, oh, like women, there's a lot of like social expectations, there's a lot of mental load placed on us, and it's very hard for us to place boundaries, especially as ADHD women or women who have, been people pleasers, because we're just expected to mold ourselves into whatever to make other people comfortable, and then that drains our energy, and then how do we set a boundary there? But men have the same or similar but different issues in that they don't have that kind of emotional awareness or that language because it hasn't been given to them.
And they not only has it not been given to them, but it's even been like really shut down,
Yeah.
like you are weak if you show emotions. Also, you're a man, so you're supposed to be strong all the time. So
Yeah.
basically the equation equals don't ever, even investigate your emotions.
I was talking to my husband yesterday, and we were talking about this whole thing about self-advocacy and being able to have just be comfortable in your own skin. Like that's like the first step is being kind to yourself and being comfortable in your own skin. And he told me, he's like, I've seen your journey. I've watched your journey. I've seen when you were struggling with this, because I didn't really start getting medicated until I was an older adult, even though I was originally diagnosed when I was younger. But he saw what it was like trying to accept myself, that self-acceptance piece. When I first started going to the pharmacy to get medication, I felt like they were looking at me like I was a drug addict and that I was going to be judged for having ADHD, that I already felt like the world thought that I was stupid or inconsistent or not capable, and like all these labels that the world had given me, I was kind of, I had like these stickers I was slapping on myself consistently over and over again. And he asked me, he goes, when was the point when you kind of like released from that? Do you know what that was? And I actually realized I had like an idea of what that was. And I had been working with a therapist, and she, I don't remember exactly what we were talking about, but I was upset about an interaction I had with somebody, and I was like, well, they think this, and I know they're going to think this about me. And she just looks at me, she goes, screw them. Screw them. They're not living inside of you. Only you are living your life. And maybe that was unorthodox for a therapist to do, but it was kind of like the permission I needed. It was the permission I needed to be able to actually myself be able to turn around. And when someone tried to slap me down, say, screw you. You're not living inside of me. Only me is here. And that's when I started to be kinder to myself. Yeah. So that's my little story.
I love that story, and I can really relate to that. That actually makes me think about something I wanted to ask you about is like sometimes a common place where we might have to advocate for ourselves as a person with executive function challenges, whether it's an ADHD diagnosis or an autism diagnosis or something else.
or chronic pain, chronic illness, is at work. So, what do you guys do? How do you support maybe a client that comes to you, or Brianna? What have you learned in your, in your research on that workplace self-advocacy, executive function challenges combination?
That is a great question. I have learned that there is still a lot of discrimination. I studied like over 100 people and surveys and responses and tested these things. And essentially, there was a split between those who chose to self-disclose and those who didn't. And those who self-disclosed faced almost more discrimination than those who didn't, because now everyone is aware of it and they're like, oh, I'm making these accommodations for you. You should be so grateful. And it was this like very toxic atmosphere that they were experiencing. Some of the time, there was also some instances where they were welcomed and it was not a problem. But normally, we're able to tell what kind of environments those are going to be when you walk into a workplace and everyone just seems very like climb the ladder, very like for themselves rather than for the community. And how can we make this a workplace that everyone wants to be in? But on the flip side of that, if you don't disclose, you don't get any of the accommodations, and then you're still discriminated against because you're still a little bit weird or a little bit off, or you're late for work, or you're past a deadline, or something happens, and you can't explain that it's not your fault. That doesn't excuse responsibility, right? Like ADHD, I always say, is an explanation, not an excuse. And the neurotypicals sometimes don't understand that, which I find very frustrating. But yeah, unfortunately, I don't really have an answer for this. The research said if you do, you're damned. If you don't, you're damned.
One thing that I do see is though is that whole disclosure piece. So if you don't disclose, then you end up masking. You end up masking so hard because you want to be seen as normal. You want to be seen as on top of your game. And then what the amount of energy it takes to mask is draining you. So you can't put your best foot forward. You can't bring all your talents to the game and give your employer the best of you. And that is such a shame. Yeah.
It's a shame
Especially.
for them and the employer, which makes me so frustrated because we have all of this potential, this creative, this whatever economic potential, and you're limiting our ability to perform our jobs because we're spending so much energy trying to blend in, trying to be, this is one of my favorite quotes, trying to be a normal horse when you are in fact a normal zebra, not a weird horse.
Yeah, love it.
I'm like,
That's great.
favorite things on the internet when it comes to ADHD.
The positive spin on that is that companies are starting to wake up. I did a lunch and learn with a tech company. It was their first introduction to neurodiversity. And we had about 100 people in the group, and probably half of them were had a neurodiversity of some sort. I opened a Q&A session in the center, in like the middle of the lunch and learn, and it like one person spoke, then another, and I thought it was going to trickle. It went from a trickle to a flood, and it was like 40 people chiming in about their experiences of being neurodiverse and working in a corporate environment. Little did I know that there were some of the company's top people, and this is like a very large international company, and some of the top people in this company were actually on the call, getting for the first time to hear what all these people go through. And there were some really candid accounts of how they deal with their everyday work life. And I actually felt heartened because there was so much interaction. And I can't imagine as an employer like how much of an education that is to hear someone, not just one, but so many voices being honest about what it's like to work and what they need to work and what they need to be successful. And I don't th just the honesty was it brightened me in some way. It gave me some hope because sometimes I feel so negative about this topic because sometimes like Brianna says, you damned if you do and you damned if you don't.
That reminds me of last year, a colleague of mine and I had the opportunity to present about executive function skills for Los Alamos National Lab. And they have an entire neurodiversity month, and they're working so hard to support their neurodiverse employees. And that was the feeling that I got too, was that not only were they able to they had resources. It was like the step after that conversation that you had was that they were actually getting the resources.
I was just going to say, this is the hope. This is where my research was leading. Like, I found that currently, damned if you do, damned if you don't. And the best way to correct that or to solve that problem, unfortunately, wasn't self-advocacy, because that puts you in a dangerous situation. It was, in fact, to talk to the corporations, and just a little bit of education provided the understanding that made it safe to self-disclose. And I love what both of you are saying, that tech companies, labs, all these companies are starting to bring in people who can teach that understanding, and then the company and the employees feel safe. And I love that.
So if you think about the risk that someone takes to advocate for themselves, like what are some safer ways that employees safer steps that employees could take to advocate for everybody, like as a whole? Like if someone came to you and said, "Hey, I want to make change at my work," if your client came to you and said, "I want to make change at my work," what should I do? What would you guys say?
I would say there's two directions you could go. There's the disclosure route, and then there's the non-disclosure route, because there are ways that you can make changes and communicate things. Brandon could probably go more into this, but that you can communicate these things or set up things for yourself by communicating in certain ways.
So when you asked that question, my mind immediately went to there are different types of advocacy. So do you want to be the like picket fence, like fighting for the people type of person? In which case, go for it. Self-disclose, say, this is what I need to be successful here. Here's how it'll benefit you. Here's how it'll benefit me. Like, be the voice for the people. Some people, that's not their type of advocacy, right? Like, I can't ever go on the picket line, like doing the strike things, just because I have a chronic illness. My body can't handle those crowds standing up for that long. So my advocacy is in what you guys are doing, like going to companies, explaining like the differences and how you can be helpful. And again, that's not everyone's kind of advocacy. Some people just need to advocate for themselves. And that could be through disclosure, or it could be through, as Melissa was saying, more subvert types of communication. So you can ask for accommodations without asking for accommodations. For example, hey, could I get that in an email? You give me that instruction verbally, I'm not gonna remember it. So you don't need to explain, oh, like I have ADHD, verbal instructions aren't gonna work really well for me. It's actually a thing that I have a problem with, and you need to like do this, otherwise it's a disability thing. Just like send them an email, be like, hey, we talked about this. Did I miss anything? Now you have a like paper trail. It's in written instructions, right? So there are things that you can do that are self versus like micro, meso, and macro, right? There's different levels to it.
Yeah, that reminds me when I was at the doctor the other day, she was like telling me like next steps, and I said, "Can you write this down for me?"
Write this
And
down.
then she said, "Hold on." And so she went into the room and she dictated it and then texted it to me. It was brilliant.
Excellent.
I
Yeah,
know.
excellent.
I
And
know.
here's the thing, if we start to teach understanding of just like such a simple accommodation of like, can I get this in a different format? Can you teach that or like say this a different way? Then they start to think about that. So like when I went to, I think it was the doctor recently also, she just offered. She's just like, oh, I can see in your face that you're not going to remember any of this. I'm going to write it down here. And I
That's
was
very
like, I
cool.
didn't even have to ask. So, like, that's what happens when more understanding, more awareness is brought to this, which is so grateful that it's been happening over the past 30 years where there has been more awareness and understanding, because then you don't even have to do the mental work to do the asking.
And so that's the other thing I was thinking about. I mean, this is like for any marginalized group that, if we want the larger society to understand, sadly, it does fall on often falls on the shoulders of that marginalized group to make the change. But you're right, there are ways that we can do that that fit our personality, fit, it's like making
And that
change
are
in any
safe.
way. Yeah,
That are
that.
safe. And the thing is that you just need to know what your needs are. If you know what your needs are, then you'll be able to verbalize those needs.
Which
That's
goes
the
back to
first
what we were
step.
talking about in the beginning.
Yeah. That's the first step of
Yes.
understand yourself, to help others understand you, to help
Yes.
society understand. That's
Yeah.
the three levels again.
Yes. I saw something the other day that I loved. It said, "Let's normalize reading a book, but not actually remembering anything that it was about that
That is my true life story. Thank you. I call those memory loss privileges, and I get to rewatch my favorite movies, reread my favorite
It's
books, and I
amazing.
get to experience all the emotions firsthand.
Yes.
But the problem is when you start watching and then you've remet, like all of a sudden it all floods back in, and then you're like,
Yeah.
oh man, I
Oh
want,
man, I do know the end of this.
I've rented movies multiple times thinking that I didn't watch them before.
The
Oh
financial
man.
cost of ADHD.
There you go.
It's not just forgetting to pay bills, it's also re-renting movies.
Yes.
All right, so that makes me think of like another aspect of life with ADHD or executive function challenges is like the sort of day-to-day living, like the at home or in personal relationships or in these kinds of things where you might have to advocate for yourself. Like, I didn't mean to not pay my bill this month. I really meant to pay it. I have the money to pay it, but I didn't pay it on time or whatever. Like, how can you advocate for your needs in those places? Is it different than at work?
Oh, so many of these things come down to two things. Self acceptance and education. I know Brianna and I could probably make endless amounts of podcast episodes on those two topics.
Preach, Melissa, preach.
Let's get into it then.
My answer to this is that you've asked two very different questions, so I'm going to pick both and answer
Yeah,
both, but it
good.
might be a
Thank
little bit
you.
long,
That's
okay?
okay.
So you talked about like at home, and then you talked about in relationships, and those are
Yeah.
two very different things.
Yes.
So if you are advocating for yourself at home and there's no one else involved, no partner, no kids, no nothing, then that involves setting up systems that work for yourself and eliminating that shame, that guilt, as Melissa says, self-acceptance. For example, if you are struggling to like the laundry piles that we all have, right? You do your laundry and now it's out to dry and it's been weeks since you put it away. You can either like be really self-critical and say, oh, I can never put this away properly. Like, why don't I
What's
ever do
wrong with
this? How,
me?
like, exactly. And so the self-advocacy there would be like, there's nothing wrong with having, like, I've done my laundry. I'm proud of myself for that. Like, that's a good thing. It's clean. I can wear it whenever. It's just not put away. Or designing a system where it's like, I'm not even going to fold this. I'm just going to put this in a clear bin that's labeled so I can find it easily. Like, that's what self-advocacy is when it comes to yourself and your daily living. It's self-acceptance and it's creating systems that work for you with your brain rather than against it. Does anyone have anything to say before I move on to relationship?
No, I just remember you just saying that your answer to this always is to create a life that where everything is ADHD friendly. So
That's what I do. My favorite ADHD hack is you know the chair drobe where you put all your clothes on that you've worn once and you don't really want to put them away, but they're not dirty. I have a shelf. I got rid of the chair drobe completely. It changed my life. It revolutionized my
Love
room
it.
cleanliness. So it's an open shelf, like a bookshelf type thing, where I fold my like clothes and like I have seven shelves and the laundry bin is right next to it. So I wear this outfit, I fold it, I put it on the shelf. There's no more chair. I can easily find it. And when it's dirty, I just slide it off the shelf into the laundry bin. It
Nice.
is so per I have never had to clean up my floor since I implemented this system, and I
That's
was a very
amazing.
messy teenager. Like that's the kind of thing that I'm talking about. Like that is self-advocacy. Instead of saying, "Oh, I just need to like work with the system." No, I made a system that works for
Yeah, it
me.
works for
So
you.
it's no longer
And I feel
pressure or
like,
stress.
yeah, I love that. And it's so much about being okay with doing things differently than maybe you think you should or other people do, or people come over, they're like, oh, this is interesting. Why you got shelves of clothes on your wall? Like,
Right?
be okay
Yeah.
with those kind of questions and maybe pick different friends.
Or be like, don't you do something a little
Yeah,
bit
don't you do
differently?
something differently?
Yeah.
Yeah. That reminds
This.
me of Cassandra Arson, the clutter bug.
Yes.
How
Yes.
she's like, yeah, if you just want a clear bin to throw your stuff in, like, who cares? If that works for you, be okay with it. And I think
Yeah.
there's so much people, especially if you're consuming a lot of social media, there's so much, unless you're seeing, accounts that are more supportive of doing things differently, there's so many of these falsely high
Yeah.
expectations for doing things
Yeah.
differently.
And the other thing that I preach this from every mountaintop is the whole concept of food, because we always feel like we need to make a multi-course meal, or it needs to be on a plate, or it needs to be in a certain way. If you can grab it out of the fridge and eat it by hand, and it is the nutrition that you need, you are eating a meal.
You mean girl dinner?
Yeah,
Girl
girl dinner,
dinner.
or sometimes I have a time, I have 3 minutes to eat one thing, and then I come back an hour later and I have 3 minutes to eat another. That's still, I still consider that a meal. So whatever I can get into my body, it's food, it's nourishing me, it's making my brain and body function, and I'm doing just fine.
So are you saying that self-advocacy is actually self-acceptance?
What? Yes.
Love it. Yeah, I mean it truly is, even in the workplace, even in that
Yes.
more difficult place that or where it could be more difficult to advocate for yourself.
Yeah. And that's the other thing is when you have confidence and understanding and you're willing to advocate for yourself, like I'm willing to set up systems that work for me, most workplaces aren't going to say no to that. You're like, "Oh, I need a spreadsheet for notes." I'm like, "Okay, do
Okay.
it." Like, "I need to wear
Actually, good
headphones in the
idea.
office." I'm like, "Okay, like do it." Right? So some of the time you can, like it's better to beg forgiveness than ask permission, that kind of thing.
Yes.
And I also
But
think that I wonder if there's probably going to be less of this soon as there's more awareness around ADHD, but I feel like, or just any kind of neurodivergence, there's like this, that stigma, that fear of like, oh, that person must be weird then, or not good at things. It's such a negative narrative around it.
We need to get rid of the shoulds. I should be acting this way. I should be this person. I should look this way. I should be doing this thing in a certain way. Get rid of the shoulds. Once you get past the shoulds, you could start thinking about what do I want and need.
The coulds.
I will hold my tongue on this because this is the subject of my second thesis, actually. And I could rant about this for hours, but I agree with everything that's been said thus far.
Love the work that you're doing, Brianna. I'm so glad.
Thank
I'm
you.
grateful for you.
I am just trying to make my world and my community happier and healthier. That is my self-advocacy, right? Like I want to take all of the knowledge that I've learned, all of the self-acceptance and understanding that I have for myself, and help others gain that.
I mean, that's kind of why we host a podcast,
I think that's why we're all here,
right? We are on that journey and we are seeing the benefits of
And
it.
I feel like this helps me learn. It helps me learn about myself. It helps me learn about the community. It's a way to connect and grow. I am very anxious to
So
answer your next
I was
question.
just gonna say,
Can
what about personal
I?
relationships?
Okay, stunning. I love this.
She's been
So
waiting.
I've been waiting. So here's the piece where ADHD is an explanation, not an excuse, comes into play the most, I believe, in personal relationships. Because at work, you can kind of mask, or there is a specific task that you're expected to achieve. And I don't know about you guys, but in my childhood, I'd go to school, be the perfect student, and then come home, and I would have to, dissociate or, not quite have a mental breakdown, but like relieve all the stress of having to act and mask in a certain way. And it is a trauma response. It's a coping mechanism. It's not something that you can turn off very easily unless you are in a very safe space out in the real world. When you come home to your partner, to your kids, that is a safe space. And so that's where a lot of your symptoms are going to be displayed, right? Like, I was late for the school drop-off. I forgot to pack my lunch. The laundry, I left it in the dryer at like three times and I have to rewash it again, like, that kind of thing. And it
Forgot to
can
pick up
weigh
the
on a
kids.
relationship. Yeah, that one. And like, it can weigh on a relationship, like even friendships and things like that with friendship decay. And the best thing you can do, as Melissa said it earlier, is self-acceptance and then education. So if you can explain to your partner why you are doing things the way you're doing things, how they could support you in doing the things, and understanding that it's not going to be a 50-50 equal relationship. That is not the case in any relationship. There's a yin and a yang. So if your partner is good at like laundry and you're good at financial planning, why would you force your partner to do financial planning and force you to do laundry? Right?
Whenever I meet a new like a potential new friend, I always want to say to them, "I just need to tell you some things about me. I will probably forget that you're my friend here and there, and then I will remember you, and I will forget these other things, and you'll have to repeat things."
I once met someone new and was like, I'm bad at people. So
Just so you know.
just so you know, it's not that I dislike you. It's probably me.
With my friends, I am chronically late. I have tried everything under the sun to be on time. Thankfully, I have very, very lovely friends who will accommodate me in that. So either they'll like set a start time where it's a little bit earlier, or there's like not that much pressure to be there like at that specific time. I've had friends come over to my house and pick me up so we can make it someplace on time. I literally had someone wake me up once. They showed up at my house. This was when I was younger. My parents let them in, came into my room, woke me up, got me dressed, and we made it to the event on time. Like that was when it was really, really bad. But
I
my
love
point
it.
is, like, if you have friends who are willing to do that kind of thing for you and not exclude you or not make you feel broken or left out just because you struggle with this one thing, I've gotten infinitely better, and those friends are very grateful for that.
And that does,
But
and just because your friends are giving that to you does not mean that you don't have things to give in return.
exactly. Yeah, I provide so much like love, support, care. So there's asp and they have qu little quirks about them that, would seem rude if I didn't understand where it was coming from. And so I never assume malice. I assume that there's something going on. And how can I help? How can I support you? What do you need? Because you're my friend and I care about you.
So a lot of this self-advocacy then in with yourself and with friends and with colleagues comes down to communication and being able to communicate. I mean, even communicate with yourself, right? Because if we just go around saying, "Oh, you're so dumb. Like, why are you doing this again? You can never do this." Like, that's communication. And then also, with our colleagues and friends. So, how do you support? How do you support yourself, and how do you support your colleague? I mean, your clients with communication skills.
Honesty. I always suggest people be honest with themselves and with those around them, because Brianna was mentioning earlier, if you go to school, you go to work and you mask all day long, you come home to that safe space and then you take the masks off. Well, the frustration's still there. So you can let that anger and frustration go with your loved ones that are surrounding you, or you can be honest with them and say, I had a really bad day. I'm struggling with this. And so processing that, saying it aloud, hearing it actually is a step towards that self-acceptance because you're being honest with yourself. And if you're processing it verbally, your partner then gets a chance to actually hear you say, I had a bad day, instead of you yelling at them because you had a bad day. It makes for a much better and more effective relationship.
So this was my first thesis. Wow, do I talk a lot about my academia? So
You're living it.
the answer to your question is communication is a two-way street, and for the majority of history, neurodivergent people have been blamed for poor communication. Right? It's actually in the DSM for autism that we have poor. But that's not the case because communication requires a listener and a talker. And if they're not listening or understanding, then that's 50% on them, just like it is 50% on you for not communicating clearly. And the best study that I've found for this is the telephone game, where they took neurodivergent people and neurotypical people, and they expected the neurodivergent people to pass the message and for it to decay faster than their neurotypical people. Same rate of decay. The only time that it decayed faster was when they crossed the message across different neurotypes, and then it decayed much, much, much faster.
Oh, that's so
So
interesting.
you're talking, isn't it so fascinating? So with that knowledge and understanding, Melissa was talking earlier about education, if you have the awareness that your communication is going to break down faster if you're talking to someone who isn't of your same neurotype, then you need to take more care into that communication strategy. That goes for work, that goes for relationships. It doesn't really go for yourself. You should take care for yourself because you've received a lot of outer messages, but you're talking to yourself, so there isn't going to be that breakdown. But my point is that with that knowledge and awareness,
comes the care, comes the patience, comes the time, comes the understanding. And if you don't have that, you're going to say, well, why didn't you understand this? Why can't you understand what I'm talking about? And it comes across in a lot of ways of like, we're very blunt. Neurotypicals get very angry when we ask why, and we need a why. We need to understand the full picture, the full why, in order to actually do the task. And it comes across to them as, you're questioning my authority. You don't trust me. And so just knowing about that difference is, I think, the biggest key. So honesty, but then also being educated and being able to explain that, hey, like, that's not what I meant. I want you to interpret it the way that I intended it to be interpreted. So let's talk about, did you receive the message the way I intended, rather than just
Assuming.
assuming that they were rude or that something,
Yes.
you
And
know.
as human beings, we make assumptions that people have an understanding, have a certain understanding. Like they have all the knowledge that's in our heads, don't they? And they fully will understand exactly what I mean. But
Yes, because everyone is a mind reader,
everyone's a
Melissa.
mind reader.
Right.
But that's not the truth, not at all. And when you like, say you have a neurotypical and you have a neurodivergent that aren't literally are not speaking the same language or have the same life experiences or their brains don't function the same at all, how can that possibly be true? So being, yeah, we need to be a little more explicit and be direct and express our needs and express what's going on with us, because how can we even expect someone to understand if they're not inside of us? Yeah.
A girlfriend of mine who also has ADHD, she and I talk a lot about how important it is to have people, in your life that can keep up with you and, keep up with your with whatever it is that's that whatever ADHD symptom, I guess, is showing at that time. They get it and they don't, no judgment. And how important for you is having a community of people who get you, who understand you.
Enormously.
Hugely.
Yeah.
It's important because, like Brianna was saying, that experiment, the double empathy experiment, where you're seeing that neurotypicals and neurodivergent individuals communicate differently. Well, isn't it really comforting when you can just walk into a room or you can have a conversation with someone who just gets it? Just gets it. Yeah.
Like truly, like the different language experience. Like I'm from Canada and I speak both English and French, and
A.
people who don't speak French don't have that option to communicate in that language. And so when they go to Quebec, it feels really misplaced and they're kind of out of their depths and they don't really know. But some people kind of speak English or they just kind of muddle along. That type of experience is what we experience most of the time. And so
Yeah.
it is incredibly comforting to have a group of people. Yes, challenge yourself, learn how to communicate with others, right? Like, I love learning languages, but it's so nice to just have a moment where you don't have to think about it, where you can use all of the slang, all of the colloquialisms. Someone just understands it so quickly. There's no need to explain, because explaining takes time and energy. There's no worry about that you're coming across incorrectly or that you're going to hurt someone's feelings. And it's so important to have that shared space of, I experienced this thing. Is it weird? Am I normal? And then everyone says, yeah, you're normal. That happens to me too, versus, oh, that's kind of weird. And then you feel bad.
I was thinking it like there's so often I want to have like a completion, like these topics, like how do you advocate for yourself? Like you want, I want like a direct answer, like a procedure that will work for everybody. But that's not the reality. The reality is that you need to figure out who you are and how you function. And you have to be able to, know when, I guess. This is also me giving everyone else permission to be able to say screw you to the people that try to push you down, that try to prevent you from trying to figure out who you are. You don't have to do that. You can, I mean, how can you breathe and live like that? Like, can you ever take a full breath if you have so much just sitting on top of you? Yeah.
Self-advocacy is self-acceptance. You have to understand who you are, that you're not broken, that you are a normal zebra, not a weird horse, and you're allowed to have needs that are different than other people's needs, and you're allowed to ask for help when you need it. And if you don't have that inner strength, then that's the first step, right? You're not going to be able to move past any of those and ask for help from other people if you can't ask for help from yourself first.
And also, there are no limitations. Don't let others limit you, and don't let you limit yourself. Start poking at the edges. Keep pushing out. Figure out who you are and what you can do, because it may be much more than you think you you already know in your being. There's nothing more satisfying than figuring out who you are and that you can go beyond what you think you can. There's just so much ownership of self in that.
Prove the haters wrong.
Prove the
Yes.
haters
Even if you're
wrong.
hating yourself. Yes.
Exactly.
Well, thank you.
Thank you.
And where can everybody find you guys?
You can find me at that's you can find me, Melissa, at likemindcoaching.com.
You could find me, Brianna,
In the
at
library?
under in the
At
library. God. Hopefully not for long. Hopefully I will be done soon. I need to be done. I'm so tired. You can find me at understandingadhd.ca.
Cool. Great. All right. Well, thank you so much. Have a great
Thanks for
day.
thank you for letting me ramble. Thanks. Bye.
Thanks for having us.
And that's our show for today. Thank you so much for taking time out of your day to listen. My biggest takeaway from my conversation with Melissa and Brianna is that self-advocacy truly does start with self-acceptance. And in order to accept yourself, you've got to know yourself and what you need. If you are already on the journey towards self-acceptance, yay! If you're just starting, take a minute now to give yourself a big hug and tell yourself you're a normal zebra among all those horses. Please share this episode with anyone you know who might resonate with what we talked about. We appreciate it so much because word of mouth keeps us on the air. And don't forget to check out the show notes for more information about Melissa, Brianna, and the Hypercast podcast. You can review us on Apple or Spotify. It makes a really big difference for us. Thank you for everyone who has. Sign up for our subscriber email at beyondbooksmart.com/podcast. And many thanks to my team here at Beyond Booksmart, Sean Potts and Justice Abbott. And thank you to Melissa and Brianna for joining me in this important conversation. And many thanks to Kate from Sage EF Coaching for connecting us. Thanks for listening.